Welcome to another episode in the podcast called Labor Matters, where I address trending issues and queries relating to employment, specifically within the context of Barbados labor laws. I'm Michelle Russell, attorney at law, and I have a passion for employment law and labor-related matters. I'm also a self-described budding social activist and a columnist for the Nation newspaper, where I write a weekly column in the Sunday Sun on employment law matters. So don't forget to get your copy of the Sunday Sun if you wish to learn more of your employment rights.
You can contact your Nation Publishing subscription team 7 days a week in 7 different ways. Call customer service any day at 430-5550. Call subscriptions at 430-5503 or 04. Email subscribers at nationnews.com. Email e-paper support at nationnews.com. Visit www.nationnews.com and select print subscriptions. Visit www.nationnews.com and select e-paper subscriptions. Visit our office on Fontebelle, St. Michael. If your call is not answered, please leave a message. We are here to serve you. Nation News, your news, your time, your way.
Now, today I wanted to address the nurses yet again. Last week, the nurses upped their industrial action and they engaged in a march and protest in Bridgetown with placards and chants of no retreat, no surrender. And I continue to support the stance of the nurses. I continue to support their right to agitate for better working conditions and, more importantly, the right to receive pay and receive pay regularly. And that's what this podcast is going to be about today. What happens when you are an employee, you are providing your services, you are turning up to work, but you are not being paid? Because there was something that jumped out to me from the comments of Senator Franklin, where he gave an interview at the end of the march. And he said, essentially, by docking their pay, the government was trying to starve them out, but the nurses weren't concerned because they were used to not being paid. And that struck a chord with me because I said to myself, there should never be a point in time when an employee gets used to not being paid. Because otherwise, what's the point? The very crux or the fundamentals of the employment relationship is I provide a service in exchange for payment. So if I'm not being paid, then why am I turning up for work? And how can we be demonizing the nurses and saying they're not committed to their profession when they had continued like this for years with irregular pay? What is the point of work if you're not being paid? So today we're going to discuss some remedies you may have if you find yourself in a similar situation. You are working, but you're not being paid or you're not being paid regularly. We're going to discuss some options available to you, primarily in the private sector, but even in the public sector. So let's get into it. Now, the first thing I want to touch is the fact that the crux of the employment relationship is that an employee is employed on a contract of service, which means he provides service to the employer, and in exchange for the service that is provided, the employer will give him a payment. That's literally what it is. It's an exchange. It is a bargain, so that for the employment relationship to work, both parties have to keep their end of the bargain. Whereas the employment relationship and the employment written contract might have several terms, it always still comes down to one thing. As the employee, you need to provide your services. As the employer, you need to pay and pay on time for the services. Now, the obligation to pay is to pay on time. Most contracts have a date by which payment is made, whether the 25th, the 30th, etc. And to pay this consistently every month for the duration of the contract. And in exchange for that payment, the employee is providing the services that are agreed. And these services generally are those that are contained in the written job description or the verbal job description, as the case may be. But it is the crux of the employment relationship. We don't go to work just because we like our jobs. No matter how much we like our jobs, we have work to have a livelihood. So that when you talk about the ILO convention and the right to work, it's the right to have dignity. And part of that dignity is the ability to meet your basic needs and your financial obligations. so that if you are not able to meet your financial obligations from the job that you have, it's one of two things that's happening. Either you're not being paid a living wage, and or you're not being paid at all. What do I mean by a living wage? This is where the conversation about minimum wage arises, where whether or not what an employee is being paid per hour or per week is enough for him to meet basic living expenses based on the cost of living in that particular jurisdiction. Now, if after he is paid, the employee cannot meet basic needs such as shelter, food, and clothing, then the employee does not have a living wage and it needs to be reassessed. I remember once hearing of an employee who got $800 a month as base pay, and I was shocked. Because I said to myself, how does that employee pay rent? Because $800 means at least $200 is going to food. You're going to need money for utilities, your cell phone, your light, your water. You're going to need money for bus fare, because at $800, you can't afford a car. It's just bus fare. So where in the middle of that can you pay rent? Where in the middle of that can you actually improve your standard of living if what you're getting is $800? Now, it was fortunately base pay and the employee had the option of making more by commission. But I also still think that base pay should represent a livable wage, because the reality is, depending on how the economy is going, an employee cannot always make above base pay. The other issue, which is the one I'm addressing today because we see it in the nurses' industrial strike, is this issue of employees working, and when the end of the month comes, the pay is not credited to their accounts or not credited on time. Now, let's deal with this, the lesser one, which is you get it anyway, it just came late. The problem with that is that some employees have automatic deductions coming off of their accounts, from salary deductions, whether it's a mortgage or higher purchase payments, loans, student loans, etc., so that they incur an interest penalty if when the automatic payment goes to pull the money, it's not there. In a case like that, it is unconscionable for the employer to routinely be paying the employee late without also adding a little extra to deal with the interest component that they may be charged, not because of any fault of their own, but because the employer paid them late. But this concept of working and not being paid at all is just unconscionable, because that represents a fundamental breach of the employment contract, which is, I will provide my services in exchange for payment. That's what it is. So that if you are providing the services, you are turning up, you are on time, you are doing what was agreed to be done, and the employer is not also doing his part by paying you and paying you on time and paying you the amount that was agreed, then that represents a fundamental breach of the contract. In law, we call it a repudiatory breach. Big word. But what it really means is that it's a breach of the contract that goes to the heart of it, and it gives the employee a choice. The employee can affirm the contract, which means you continue to work without being paid, or the employee can treat the breach as bringing the contract to an end and has the right to then claim that he has been constructively dismissed by not being paid. So at what point can an employee claim constructive dismissal? Now, if your employer doesn't pay you 1 month or pays you late 1 month, that would not necessarily give rise to a successful claim in constructive dismissal, because as I've said before in other forums, and I think maybe in at least one podcast, constructive dismissal is much harder to prove than people realize. So that what you want to do is make sure you have sufficient grounds and strong grounds upon which to make the allegations to make sure that you don't lose. So that if you are not paid for, say, 2 to 3 months, and there is no promise from the employer as to when the payment would be made, and including back pay plus payment going forward, then it is unlikely that you can claim constructive dismissal. So what you want to do is make sure it was not just a one-off. If it was just a one-off, you don't want to jump to constructive dismissal. But from the first time you are not paid, you need to confront HR. You need to confront your employer. Bring to their attention the fact that the money was not credited. Maybe they are unaware. Maybe it's a financial institution issue. If they are aware and they apologize, get them to agree to a timeline. When that timeline comes, you then need to follow up. But you also need to make your employer aware of all the obligations that you are unable to meet because of it and discuss things like back pay, the possibility of an additional sum for any interest payments you may incur. But do not be quiet because this is not sufficient. This is not good enough to sit back. Watch the breach of the crux of the employment relationship and just hope that one day you'll be paid. At some point, you have to agitate for payment. But certainly, if, like these nurses, you have not been paid for 2, 3, 4 months, and I dare say even longer, you're going to have to think long and hard if you want to continue working under these conditions. Because like I said, if you are working and not being paid, then what is the point? Yes, you can love your job. Yes, you can love the people you work with. But the point of a job is to give you dignity and independence, the ability to meet financial obligations. That is something that is lost. And bear in mind, if an employer could not pay 1 month's pay, the more it racks up in non-payment, is the less likely that they can honor it. So that if your pay is $2,000 a month and your employer has not paid you that $2,000, it's easier for them to find that $2,000 to pay you than if you let them rack up 6 months of non-payment, because now that's $12,000. And if they couldn't have paid $2,000, it's less likely that they can find $12,000. And then remember, if they're not paying you, there's a big possibility other employees are not being paid, which means the wages bill is going up and up and up, and it becomes harder for the employer to find the money to pay everybody. That is why I always say you have to act fast. I have had people contact me who have not been paid for months, and I'm surprised they continue to work, because I say the employer is racking up a debt that will be harder to pay. At some point, you need to make a decision. So if you decide you're not staying anymore because you're turning up for work, you're working and there's nothing to show for it, the bank is foreclosing, your landlord kicking you out, as the case may be, you have to make the hard decision and decide to claim constructive dismissal, which means you will resign on the ground of non-payment, which represents a breach of the employment contract, but you get to treat yourself as if you were dismissed. Now, if you're in the private sector and you claim constructive dismissal, it is more likely something that you can also claim constructive unfair dismissal, which means you can then file a claim with the labor office for unfair dismissal, where you'll get compensation for unfair dismissal, which is calculated based on the number of years of employment multiplied by a weekly portion of your wages. So it would go through the labor office and you would get compensation. Whether or not you would get back pay or arrears of pay is perhaps the more difficult one, simply because a tribunal is a creature of statute. And the Employment Rights Tribunal is only allowed to make awards that the legislation itself gives them power to make. So, for instance, the Employment Rights Act is where the Employment Rights Tribunal gets its power. And there's nothing in the Employment Rights Act that allows the tribunal to award arrears of wages. So it's likely that the only thing you'd be able to get is compensation for unfair dismissal, but not necessarily back pay. But it doesn't mean you wouldn't have a case at common law for breach of contract. And if you file that claim for breach of contract, whether you try it as an out of court negotiation or you actually file it in court, then you would more likely be able to get the arrears of wages. But in a case like that, you definitely need an attorney. That's not something a union representative can do for you. And it's not something you could possibly really do for yourself, because filing things in court is completely different to going before the tribunal. If you work in a public service and you're not being paid, it becomes more difficult. Because sadly, it's not just the nurses in the public service who have complained about non-payment or inconsistent payment. I know of contract doctors, I've heard of 1 and 2 attorneys, lots of departments. I'm constantly surprised by the number of employees within the government who do not receive pay and do not receive it or don't receive it regularly. And personally, I think the government has to do better as an employer in how it pays its employees, in how it pays independent contractors, and in how it pays third party providers, because people work to get paid. So that you would generally try to trigger the grievance procedure under the general orders, even though I'm not particularly confident that that will give you what you want. Simply because the people to whom you must make the complaint of the grievance are also the people who need to look into your non-payment. So it might be counterintuitive. But if you are there in the public service for a long time, a lot of people like to say they don't want to lose their years. They don't want to lose their pension entitlement. But if you are working and not being paid, what is the current benefit to you? Even if you get your pension, you're going to be in so much debt that that pension or that gratuity is going to be go to pay off your debt, and going forward, you still will be without money. So you too in the public service can allege constructive dismissal. You won't be able to go to the Employment Rights Tribunal because based on the Employment Rights Act, it doesn't apply to the Crown. So in certain professions, if you're not part of a statutory organization or a statutory body and you work directly for the Crown, then the ERA does not apply to you. But if you are part of a statutory corporation, then the ERA does in fact apply. So that people in the public service would have to allege constructive dismissal as a breach of contract and file the claim in the law courts either as wrongful dismissal or breach of contract or both, right? And in that case, what you would be seeking is the arrears of wages plus if you made the wrongful dismissal claim, it's essentially calculated roughly the same way that compensation for unfair dismissal is calculated, with the exception that damages for wrongful dismissal are calculated in this, based on the first schedule of the Severance Act, so that what they use is the maximum insurable earnings rather than your actual earnings. So for instance, the maximum insurable earnings is up to last year was $4,880 per month, whereas so if you're paid $6,000 a month, your severance is calculated only up to the maximum insurable earnings, which would be only up to $4,880. So even though you were paid $6,000 a month, your severance is not calculated on that $6,000. The difference is for unfair dismissal, it's calculated on actual earnings, so that it would be calculated on that $6,000 or a portion of that $6,000 and not on the lesser figure of the $4,880. So if you're not paid or not being paid regularly, because like I said, the first time is not when you trigger constructive dismissal. If it happens repeatedly, then you trigger it. You can file a claim for constructive unfair dismissal or for constructive wrongful dismissal, which is the one that goes to the law courts. But if you are an employer and you realize that you are unable to pay your workers, there are other things you can do that would be more mutually beneficial than having an employee continue to work for 3 to 4 to 8 months without being paid. For one, you should consider placing an employee on short time or temporary layoff, because at least in that instance, the employee can get unemployment benefits from NIS. So it's better than getting $0. Short time might be the better option, because then they would provide some days of work while at the same time getting paid for those days of work. So the company benefits by getting the service provided, and the employee benefits by getting paid from NIS rather than getting no pay. In the instance where it's not that you're not going to pay the employee, but you want to reduce the salary, first remember, you cannot unilaterally reduce the salary of an employee. You need the employee's written permission. Once the employee gives that, I personally don't believe it should ever be more than 20% reduction, but that's my own feeling. But once the employee agrees to that, consider giving other benefits to the employee in lieu of the reduced pay. Because you cannot expect the same level of commitment and work from an employee for less pay. So consider giving them extra vacation days, mental health days in lieu of the reduced salary. Consider giving them any other benefits that can come with employment, including reducing their working hours, reducing their workload, or allowing them to work remotely. It's kind of like an exchange. The employment contract is a bargain. One person provides services, and in exchange, he gets a benefit. So even when the benefit cannot be completely financial, as in payment, it must be some kind of benefit. In fact, there's the Protection of Wages Act, which is an old act, and it was back in the day when a lot of the sugar workers were not necessarily paid in legal tender, but maybe given like crops and stuff in exchange for payment. That act came in, or partly came in, to make sure they actually got legal tender. So it is very, very important that you don't skirt a line where you're no longer paying in legal tender, because then you might run afoul of that act. You want to make sure you're still giving them something that is financial or has a financial benefit. What the government has done is given bonds, right? So they pay bonds to their employees. We had the BOSS program, which is to mature in a few years, where they reduce the pay and the employees in the public sector will get it back in bonds later on. Some of them have been cashing out monthly, from what I understand. Having said that, It comes right back down to the very fundamental of the employment relationship is that the employee provides his service in exchange for pay. So that it represents a fundamental breach where the employee is providing the service and not being paid on time, not being paid regularly, or not being paid at all. We must never normalize a situation, downplay a situation, or overlook a situation where an employee is working regularly but not being paid. So, again, I stand in support of the nurses. I stand with Senator Franklin on it. And if it was any other union, I would have stood with them on it as well for advocating so fiercely for the nurses, because every employee has the right to receive pay. I am Michelle Russell. Thanks for joining on another episode of Labor Matters.